Good day, and welcome to the Umpqua Holdings Corporation second quarter earnings call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the call over to Ron Farnsworth, Chief Financial Officer. Please go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Melanie. Good morning, and thank you for joining us today on our second quarter 2016 earnings call. With me this morning are Ray Davis, the President and CEO of Umpqua Holdings Corporation, Cort O'Haver, our Bank President, and Dave Shotwell, our Chief Credit Officer. Cort and Dave will join us as we take your questions after our prepared remarks. Yesterday afternoon, we issued an earnings release discussing our second quarter 2016 results. We have also prepared a slide presentation, which we will refer to during our remarks this morning. Both of these materials can be found on our website at umpquabank.com under the Ask Us Investor Relations section. During today's call, we may make forward-looking statements, which are subject to risks and uncertainties and are intended to be covered by the safe harbor provisions of federal securities law. For a list of factors that may cause actual results to differ materially from expectations, please refer to page 2 of our earnings release conference call presentation, as well as the disclosures contained within our SEC filings. And we'll now turn the call over to Ray Davis.
Okay, good morning, everybody. As you're aware, this morning we announced our second quarter operating earnings of 31 cents per fully diluted share. This compares favorably to the 29 cents reported for the first quarter and is in line with operating earnings reported for the second quarter of last year. Our operating results for the second quarter reflected strong top-line revenue growth, benefiting from a robust mortgage banking environment, and double-digit loan and lease growth, along with continued progress in improving organization-wide efficiencies. A few highlights. Gross loan and lease growth was $545 million, or 13% on an annualized basis. Total loan production of $2.9 billion was at record levels, and our commercial loan pipeline grew to $3 billion. With the luxury of strong growth in earning assets, and as we have guided, we completed the sale of $136 million of residential mortgages during the period and wrapped up the sale of $67 million of multifamily loans placed in held for sale in the previous quarter. Overall deposit growth for the quarter of $98 million was weaker than we anticipated. However, early third quarter numbers have bounced back strongly. Umpqua places a high value on core deposit growth, and all our teams in retail as well as in commercial banking are focused on improvement in this area. Mortgage banking revenues increased significantly during the quarter, driven by higher seasonal purchase activity and stronger refinance volume resulting from the low mortgage interest rate environment. For sale mortgage originations increased by 37%, and our home lending margin increased by 30 basis points compared to the prior quarter. The organization-wide efficiency initiatives we have put in place over the past 6 months are beginning to take hold. I'm pleased to report that our operating efficiency ratio for the quarter was 59.8%. Our success in lowering our efficiency ratio is due to growth in top-line revenues, along with, of course, lower core expenses. Looking out for the remainder of 2016, we expect to wrap up the remaining system integration activities, which would include the Sterling Online Banking customer conversion and some remaining back-office consolidations, as well as some continued minor analysis and scrubbing around our loan level data and classifications. As these activities are completed this year, we should see merger-related expenses wind down. Before I turn the call back to Ron, let me touch briefly on Pivotus, our subsidiary, to provide some additional color. As we announced last year, our Silicon Valley subsidiary, Pivotus Ventures, was formed to accomplish several goals. One, to spearhead our efforts to meet the changing preferences in the way customers choose to transact with Umpqua, which means pivoting Umpqua from a transaction-oriented based institution to one that will meet the needs of customers through digital channels. Two, this digital platform must also be capable of delivering incremental accretive revenues to the company. And three, and I won't get into specifics on timelines and expected results. However, I can tell you that our technologists are looking at this project focused on three major areas: service, advisory assistance, and orchestration of customers' current financial situation, as well as their future aims and intentions. I can tell you that our customer experiences experiments that we have been conducting are going extremely well, and the development of Phase 1's first prototype is on schedule. When we announced Pivotus, we also talked about the collaborative efforts we hoped the company would attract to leverage and scale the combined resources of like-minded institutions. To this end, in early June, we announced that Pivotus had entered into a new collaboration project with the $300 billion United Kingdom's Nationwide Building Society. We see this as an important step in the overall strategy for Pivotus, as it brings in a well-respected partner who shares Umpqua's passion for the customer experience and using technology to enhance and differentiate that experience. So I'll turn the call back to Ron, but I hope that added some color on our Pivotus subsidiary. Back to you, Ron.
Okay, thanks, Ray. And I'll be referring to certain page numbers from our earnings presentation. Starting first with the P&L, as noted on page 5 of the slide deck, for the second quarter, we reported 31 cents per share in our non-GAAP operating earnings measure, up 7% or 2 cents from the 29 cents per share in the first quarter. GAAP earnings per share were 25 cents, up from 22 cents in the first quarter. In addition to the presentation, we also show the reconciliation for our non-GAAP measures on non-interest income and expense on page 8 of the earnings release. Adjusting out the non-operating items, we saw a $22.3 million increase in non-interest income, mostly related to higher mortgage production revenue at higher margins, higher service charge revenue, and higher other non-interest income, and flat non-interest expense, noting included in this was a $6 million increase in home lending expense from the higher production. These were partially offset by an $8.5 million decline in net interest income, with $6.5 million of that from a Q1 acceleration on sale that did not repeat here in Q2, and an increase in the provision for loan loss, based primarily on higher net charge-offs. After tax, these all netted out to 31 cents per share for the quarter. Turning to net interest income and margin on slide 6, net interest income decreased by $8.5 million from the prior quarter level. And again, recall last quarter we had the $6.5 million of credit discount accretion accelerated from the sale of purchased credit-impaired loans, which did not recur this quarter. The remaining $2 million decline was split between lower bond yields and lower loan yields, given continued repricing from the declining interest rate environment over the past 6 months. The total net interest margin was 4.08% for the second quarter. Credit discount accretion from the Sterling portfolio was $10 million in the second quarter. Excluding credit discount, the margin was 3.87%, with a decline of 11 basis points from the first quarter, about evenly split between loan and investment yields. We do not expect the margin ex credit discount to decline in the 10 basis point range quarterly for the remainder of this year, but do expect continued modest pressure on this ratio given the significant drop in market index rates over the past 6 months. On slide 11, the provision for loan and lease losses increased this quarter to $10.6 million, driven primarily by an increase in net charge-offs to $9.8 million. We've stated in past calls we are bouncing along the bottom in terms of credit losses, and the increase this quarter was centered in two credits. Barring any significant changes to the overall economy, we expect continued solid credit performance for the balance of the year in line with the last few quarters. Now moving to non-interest income on slide 8, we saw an increase of $22 million from the first quarter level driven by higher mortgage production revenue, higher service charge revenue, gain on loan sales, and higher debt capital markets customer loan level swap trading revenue. Recall last quarter we talked about the increase in gain on loan sale revenue for a trade that closed in April. These kinds of gains should continue through the rest of 2016 as we continue to manage the portfolio to the mix and size we are targeting. Also, our customer loan level swap trading revenue and other non-interest income was up $3.4 million. The largest component of our non-interest income is mortgage banking revenue. The total GAAP figure this quarter included a $13.9 million loss on the change in fair value of the MSR, on the heels of the $20.6 million decline in the first quarter, resulting directly from the significant decline in long-term interest rates since December, where the 10-year Treasury yield has declined by about a third. The MSR asset is now valued at 83 basis points of the service portfolio, down from 101 basis points at year-end and 88 basis points last quarter. Excluding the MSR fair value change, mortgage production and servicing revenue was $50.7 million, up $14.7 million or 41% from the first quarter. On page 9, you will see for sale mortgage originations increased 37% to just over $1 billion. Our gain on sale margin increased to 4.02%, up from 3.72% last quarter, based in part on increased margin added to manage volume and an increase in the lock pipeline heading into Q3. Also, our servicing revenue increased 13% this quarter to $8.6 million as we completed the conversion of Sterling's servicing portfolio from an outsourced provider. We expect mortgage production to remain strong in the third quarter and expect our gain on sale margin to remain in the mid to upper 3% range. Turning now to non-interest expense on slide 10. Our operating expense was $180.4 million for the quarter, which includes an additional $6 million in home lending expense related to higher volume this quarter. Said differently, had mortgage originations been at the same level as they were in the first quarter, our operating expenses would have been around $174 million. This is a good trend, which shows we are continuing to capture efficiencies. I'm more than happy to see the increased home lending expense, given their gain and servicing revenue increased threefold the expense lift. It's also important to note our Q2 operating expense did not include the anticipated benefit from the store consolidations we just completed, which should reduce expense further by about $6 million annually starting later here in Q3. As Ray mentioned on the January earnings call, we hit our operating efficiency ratio goal as it declined to just under 60% this quarter, ending at 59.8%. Aside from the store consolidations just completed, additional initiatives include excess back office facility consolidation, streamlining our front and back office operations, and this is fair to say, our store network will continually be reviewed for optimization given customer utilization changes. However, we also recognize headwinds will persist from the lower forward interest rate curves and potential future market volatility. As for the non-GAAP expense adjustments, merger expense was slightly higher than anticipated this quarter, but that was more than offset by a lower than anticipated exit disposal cost here in Q2. We expect lower merger expense in Q3 and Q4 as we work to complete our integration, but do expect slightly higher exit disposal costs for the second half of the year, as we just completed the store consolidations and expect additional back office facility consolidation through year end. With that, I'm now going to turn to slide 11 on the balance sheet. Interest-bearing cash ended the quarter just over $500 million, down slightly this quarter given the continued strong loan growth. Our goal is to keep our interest-bearing cash in the $500 million to $1 billion range and our investments in the $2.5 to $2.6 billion range for the foreseeable future. On slide 12, you'll see the mix of the loan portfolio. Grossing up for the sales and transfer to held for sale, our total loan growth this quarter was $545 million, or 13% annualized. On slide 13, total deposits increased by $95 million from the prior quarter. For the year to date, our deposits are up $551 million, while net loans are up $488 million. Balanced growth we are focused on continuing, with core deposits funding loans. Our loan-to-deposit ratio ended the quarter at 95%, and the cost of interest-bearing deposits remained stable at 27 basis points for the quarter. Lastly, on slide 15, I want to highlight capital. noting that all of our regulatory ratios remain in excess of well-capitalized levels, with our Tier 1 Common at 10.9% and total risk-based capital at 14.1%. Our total payout ratio was strong at 51% of operating earnings. We are focused on creating long-term value for our shareholders, and we recognize that tangible book value per share plus dividend growth is a metric that some investors use to measure that. Umpqua's tangible book value per common share increased to $9.41 in the second quarter, compared to $8.92 per share in the same period of the prior year. Factoring in the 64 cents of dividends paid over that time, our yearly growth in tangible book value per share plus dividends was 12.7%. Our excess capital is approximately $200 million, down slightly from last quarter based on the strong loan growth we continue to see. As we have discussed for the last few years, we plan to continue to employ excess capital in a prudent and thoughtful manner. And now I'll turn the call back to Ray to wrap up our prepared remarks.
Okay. Before we take your questions, let me comment on our June announcement regarding our CEO succession plans. As reported on January 1st, 2017, I will be stepping down as president and CEO of the company, turning over the reins of the company to Cort O'Haver, our current bank president. My role with the company will change as I assume the role of executive chairman of the board. My duties will include normal chair duties, of course, as well as to assist in the transition process where needed to assure a smooth transition to Cort. I will also remain responsible and oversee our Pivotus subsidiary. And during the period I am executive chair, Peggy Fowler, our current chairperson, will assume the responsibilities of lead director. As mentioned, I have the utmost confidence in Cort and his ability to lead the company. We both are in sync on the strategy, value proposition, and business model of the company, and I look forward to both of our new roles within the company. So now we will take your questions.
Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question, you may do so by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll go first to Steven Alexopoulos with J.P. Morgan.
Hey, everybody.
Hey. Morning.
I wanted to start on the margin. It was under, obviously, quite a bit of pressure this quarter, but if you look, even what you're pointing out on slide 6, it's been under a lot of pressure over the past year, both reported and core. You know, maybe for Ron, all things considered, you know, considering where the yield curve sits today, at what level should you expect to see the margin start to find a bottom here?
Well, and again, part of the noise from Q1 to Q2 was the acceleration of the credit discount accretion, but that is an amortizing asset over time, and we've talked about the last quarter or two. Net new business is coming on in the mid to upper threes in terms of margin, incremental margin. But also here over the last, 6 months, we've seen roughly a third of the 10-year part of the curve drop and maybe close to 40, 50 bits on the belly of the curve. So that's significant volatility when it comes to repricing for loans that were made in years past. Given that net incrementals coming on in the mid to upper threes, you can do the math and look out over the coming year or two, assuming no change in rates, that I expect the margin will ultimately rest at that level, but it's going to take a bit. And also I made the point earlier, I don't expect to see another 10 basis point decline here in the third quarter, and that's more based on the trend of the activity during Q2.
Okay, that's actually a helpful color. Looking at core earnings, which were up nicely from the linked quarter, but still basically flat where you were a year ago, and this is even with mortgage up very sharply, can you give more color on the efforts, initiatives that you're pursuing to help drive positive operating leverage from here, particularly now that you're at your efficiency objective?
Yeah, and also just recognize, flat earnings from a year ago, but also from a year ago quarter, we also had a pretty sizable drop in discount accretion, the credit discount accretion from Q2 to 15 to Q2 of 16. But overall efficiency initiatives we've talked about, for the balance of the year are going to be centered around the additional store consolidations we just completed, some additional back office facility consolidation, and we'll see those savings start to drop in. So I feel really good about where we are in terms of the initiatives we put in place on top of the deal-related synergies.
Okay. That's That's helpful, Ron. And just one final one. I'm surprised to see you grew time deposits here up about $60 million in the quarter. Can you just talk about your thoughts around deposit funding? I think Ray said that you're expecting a bounce back in 3Q on deposits. Is that essentially time deposits again? Thanks.
It's not time deposits. We're seasonally stronger in Q3. It's generally the strongest quarter of the year. I think in time deposits, I'd like to think that in terms of the time deposit customer, we potentially have hit a bottom in terms of the mix. Today, that's around, 15 to 16% of the portfolio. Back pre-recession in a different rate environment, that was closer to 30. So that was a good trend to see, but we're not doing anything on special on the pricing side for the time deposits to generate that. When we look into Q3 for deposit growth, I expect it to be balanced across the board.
Okay. Great. Thanks for all the color.
Yeah, thank you.
We'll go next to Jeff Rulis with D.A. Davidson.
Thanks. Good morning.
Hey, Jeff.
Ron, do you have the average loan yield of the loans that you sold or transferred compared to the loans or the loan yields on loans that you kept in portfolio this quarter?
So this quarter, the loan yield ex the credit discount was 4.6%. In terms of the loans that were sold during the quarter, they were right around that level, maybe a bit or two higher.
Okay, so close, but maybe a bit above that. All right. And then you mentioned the two credits on the net charge-offs predominantly. What were the loan categories of those or any other color there?
These were commercial loans. They were shared national credits that we've been in an extended workout period on. And one of those, it was concentrated in one of those two credits, which also resulted in a payoff of that credit, which helped us with our NPAs and classified numbers.
Got it. Thanks, Dave. And then the, I guess just on the loan outlook, you guys signaled in late in Q1 that you anticipated a pickup in Q2 and Q3. Given where we're at in the pipeline that Ray referenced, just expectations for the back half of the year on loan growth.
You know, hey Jeff, it's Cort. So you know, all of our pipelines are as robust as they were 90 days ago when we talked. So we feel really good about production.
I'll step back. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
We'll go next to Jackie Camiera with KBW Investments.
Hi. Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
I wondered if maybe, Cort, you could give some color on FinPAC and what you're seeing there. You had really nice lease growth in the quarter and kind of provide an update on, I know in the past we've talked about a three-legged stool that you looked to there and just kind of where those three separate entities are sitting and how you see the growth moving forward.
Yeah, happy to, Jackie. So I think we really hit our stride with FinPAC in this last quarter. I anticipate that to continue. So in the three legs of the stool, the traditional leg, which is the TPO, the third-party origination channel, we did $94 million in the second quarter, which was very, very strong. What we call UBELF, which is our Umpqua Bank Equipment Lease Finance leg of the stool, we did almost $40 million, and that's really a traditional bank lease product with existing customers. And then the third leg, which we started late October of last year, November, we did $28 million in the quarter, which I think is very, very strong with the fact we've only been in that here for, a little over two quarters. So they had a nice, nice quarter. We're still getting a very, very attractive overall blended yield in that group, and we look for some good solid growth with FinPAC going forward.
How much has that particular portfolio, and I mean all three groupings of loans, how much has that been impacted by the movement of rates?
Not as much as you'd think, because we are very, very diligent about pricing for risk in that portfolio. So we've got a very elaborate model that we run these leases through and looking at all types of data points, and then we affix a return based on the relative risk. And with the exception of getting into A paper, which is a higher quality lease opportunity for the bank, which obviously carries a slightly lower yield to us because it's a higher quality, we've been very, very diligent in maintaining those yields based on risk. So it hasn't really been impacted greatly by the changes in the yield curve. And the pipeline in that segment is continuing to grow because of the small businesses that are being created in the general economy.
Okay. Where are you seeing loan yields at currently for the group, excluding A paper?
I'll tell you, the blended average weighted coupon for that group for all the second quarter was a smidge over 11%.
Okay.
And the A paper would be higher single digits.
Yeah.
BC would be in the upper teens to low 20s.
Okay. And it's, would you say that that's running on track to where when you originally purchased FinPAC, you thought the growth would trend toward?
Yeah, we will exceed what we told you all about 3 years ago. Almost, I think on this call 3 years ago, we told you we'd be to $1 billion. In 4 years, we'll exceed that.
Okay. Thank you. That's very helpful. I'll step back now.
Yeah, thank you.
We'll go next to Matthew Clark with Piper Jaffray.
Hey, good morning. First one, just wanted to double-check the non-interest expense tied to mortgage. I know it was up about $5.9 million this quarter. Just wanted to double-check that figure.
Yeah, $5.9 million was the increase in home lending expense from Q1 to Q2.
Yeah, and just the dollar amount in total in Q2?
Oh, total was right around $35.
Okay. And then did you buy back any stock during the quarter, and can you just update us on your priorities and kind of how they stack rank as it relates to your excess capital?
Yeah, no, we didn't buy back stock this past quarter, just based off of open window timing. I expect we'll repurchase a couple hundred thousand shares here in Q3.
And then your strategic priorities, can you just maybe update us on your thoughts about additional M&A and so forth?
Well, traditional M&A, this is Ray, Matt. Traditional M&A, when it comes to banks, not that attractive right now for us. Not that we don't look at what comes across our desk, but the question I always ask people is, why would I buy a bank in this environment? I think for us to get actively interested in a potential a bank would have to be strategically over the top, make a lot of sense for us to get excited about it.
And Matt, this is Ron, to parlay that back into our capital, as we look at allocating capital over time, we see much more upside with strong organic growth, and that really centers around a lot of what Ray's been talking about with Pivotus in future years.
Got it. Okay. And then just on the securities yields, just curious, you know, how much of that related to an increase in premium amortization?
Virtually all of it. It was about $1 million drop in total, and it was about $1 million increase in premium amortization based off of the drop in the belly of the curve and the increase in the CPRs.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
We'll go next to Joe Morford with RBC Capital Markets.
Thanks. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Joe.
Just first a follow-up to Steve's questions on deposits. Sounds like the early read here in Q3 is better, but just kind of looking longer term, what are your expectations for growth for the rest of the year? And do you have any campaigns planned at all, given that the loan-to-deposit ratio is now upwards of 95%?
Yeah, this is Ray, Joe. Yeah, we have always believed, and I think you followed us long enough to know that Umpqua's been, you know, I think we've been labeled a deposit-making machine when we want to be, and those engines have been turned on. We have, you know, all kinds of promotions, campaigns internal to the organization. I would rather incent my people versus raising rates, which we're not going to do. We are not the highest guy in the market, nor will we ever be. But we do look forward to a stronger core deposit growth for the second half of the year.
Okay, that's helpful. And then the other question is just, I think, Ron, maybe following up on the mortgage banking, it sounded like you suggested the gain on sale margins would be in the kind of mid to high 3% range, third quarter, maybe down a little bit from the second here. It's just kind of curious what's driving the change there.
Well, again, this quarter here with the 4%, there was roughly 10, 12 bits of that included the increase in lock pipeline from March to June. I'm assuming mortgage revenue is going to remain strong well into Q3. Our pipelines will suggest that. So assuming no significant change in that log pipeline, I'd expect we'd be in the upper threes on the gain on sale margin.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, next to Aaron Deere with Sandler O'Neill & Partners.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Wanted to touch on the reserve level. Obviously, there's some noise this quarter with the higher with the bounce and the charge-offs, but I'm surprised to see that there's no rebuilding of the gap reserve. The stated reserve with the discounts, I guess, is still at 1.3, but that's been coming down pretty rapidly. And you know, well, the gap reserve just hasn't been building at all. And I'm just wondering kind of what your thinking is in terms of that, you know, even vis-a-vis having a pretty favorable outlook for credit.
Yeah, it's been relatively steady up a bit or down a bit here over the past year. And really underlying that is just continued modest improvement in the underlying quality of the portfolio, very much a formulaic-driven approach to the valuation. We can't just go in there and say, hey, I'm just going to put in some extra just to show that we're building the reserve. It's dependent upon the quality of the portfolio and the risk ratings. So what you see here over the last couple of quarters is, in essence, with that continued improvement in the underlying quality of the portfolio, the provision's been, you know, relatively close to the net charge-off amount. I'd expect that's going to continue here for the balance of the year. We talked about in the prepared remarks, now I'd expect you should look at credit for the second half of the year to be in the range of what we've shown here over the past year, bouncing along the bottom.
Okay, and then following up on the expense or the efficiency initiatives and the discussion around the efficiency ratio, I guess at the bank level you dip below the 60% on an adjusted basis. Might we still get the consolidated efficiency ratio below 60 by year end on a reported basis?
Well, the consolidated operating ratio is 59.8%. That's the number we've always talked about getting to 60 with. The GAAP number, of course, includes the merger expenses, which should be winding down. It also includes the, you know, the wild card with the fair value adjustments. So I think on a GAAP basis, if you were to parlay those forward and you assume, you know, sizable rate increase in rates or maybe just getting back with some of what's left, you might see an MSR gain in the second half of the year, and that could leave the GAAP number. But we're really focused with that number on what we can control and what we can control within these walls, and we're at that 60% level.
Okay, very good. Thanks for taking my question.
You bet. Thank you.
We'll go next to Tyler Stafford with Stephens Inc.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon.
Morning.
Hey, I hopped on late, so I apologize if you covered this already, but I just wanted to follow up on the $177 million plus or minus operating expenses that we've talked about in the past. Absent kind of the variable puts and takes from mortgage, is that still a number that we should be thinking about, even with the branch consolidation and everything else you have going on in the back half of the year? And then secondly, just the pace of loan sales we should be expecting. Can you hit that one more time?
Sure. On the expense, we actually beat that by 3 here this past quarter. If you back out the, you know, the volatility or up and down with home lending expense, so our operating expense was 180. We saw a $6 million increase from Q1 to Q2 on home lending expense. You back that out, we beat 174, which would have beat the 177. I expect it'll be closer to that 174, assuming no change, or certainly assuming we're back at Q1 levels on mortgage, closer to the 180 if we're, you know, relatively close here to Q2 levels on mortgage. And what you'd see from the store consolidations probably here in Q3 is about $1 million, given they're going to occur somewhere in the middle of the quarter. And then going forward, that's about $1.5 million a quarter.
Okay, that's helpful. And can you just, I missed what you said earlier about the pace of loan sales from here.
Yeah, we'll continue to monitor the markets on that front. I would say assume small to modest portfolio loan sales in Q3 and Q4, probably in line with what you've seen the last couple quarters.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
You bet. Thank you.
And that will conclude our Q&A session. I'd like to turn the conference back over to our speakers for any additional or closing remarks.
Okay. Well, I appreciate all the questions, and I'm going to thank everybody for their interest in Umpqua Holdings and attendance on the call today. This will conclude the call. Goodbye.
And once again, that does conclude today's conference. We thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.